Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings. From premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts, start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the Flow Track Podcast. I'm Kevin Sully, joined by Gordon Mack. FlowTrackPodcast@gmail.com is our email address. You can listen wherever you find audio podcast or watch live on YouTube. Subscribe to the Flow Track Podcast YouTube channel, where I've been told, Gordon, that people have flipped. They used to be anti-Gordon, and now they're anti-Kevin. I don't know what I did. To paraphrase you, what did I do?
How was your weekend? I don't know what you did, but... How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. It's still going.
Still going? It is. Yeah, today's Labor Day. Do you have the exciting Labor Day plans?
My plans, I only have one kid with me this weekend, which has been great because if you go from three kids down to one kid, it's like taking ankle weights off where you were running before, or maybe going from altitude down to sea level, especially when the kid that you're with is the oldest of the group. So it's been fun. We've been hanging out. I've been letting him stay up late, watch a lot of sports together. It's been terrific. How about you?
Been good. Did you watch the Florida State Notre Dame football game? Did you watch college football in general? That was fun.
I watched that game, and then I watched part of Wisconsin and Penn State on Saturday. I watched the men's national team game, part of that, U.S. versus Canada. No love lost between those two. It was kind of funny. They're getting all chippy. I was like, it's Canada. Like, why? They're all nice. Like, that was weird. They're pushing and shoving and talking trash. It was a weird dynamic there. So
yeah. I started binge watching a Netflix show called Clickbait. And don't tell me how it ends, but it's a good bingey show. I watched like 6 episodes in a row. Only 2 left. So Clickbait is my suggestion if you need something to do this Labor Day holiday. Watch Clickbait. But enough of that. Let's talk about track. We had 2 track meets this past weekend. It was pretty cool. They weren't diamond leagues, but we had one live on Flow Track, and there was another one that was in Italy. What do you want to talk about first? Talk about Shelly-Ann back at it again on the track?
Yeah, Shelly-Ann back at it again. We didn't see her in one of the diamond leagues, Brussels. But we knew her season wasn't over. Comes back in this Continental Tour and lays down a 10.81. Looked very comfortable. It's the gap between her and everybody else when Thompson Hurrah and Jackson isn't in the race is just large. It's incredible just how big of a gap it is. And you can say the same thing, you know, when Thompson Hurrah doesn't have Fraser Price in the race. Although even when she had Fraser Price in the race on a couple occasions this year, she was able to get a fairly significant win. But the thing that jumped out just watching this race was just the ease with which she did it. It just completely blew away the field the last 50 meters. And it's a pretty not that weak of a field, right? Like it doesn't have Thompson Hurrah, doesn't have some of their big names, but this was a solid field for a non-Diamond League race. And she just destroyed everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing how these athletes are able to just put on race after race after race. Like, there are obviously notable athletes who've kind of shut it down early, maybe done just one race at pre and then shut it down. But mm-hmm. Shelly-Ann and Elaine Thompson have just like treated it like it's at the Olympics was just like a prequel to their actual season. And they've been running very often, more often than I would expect. I mean, you look at Shelly-Ann's season post-Olympics, she's already run three 100 meters, mm-hmm. like in such a short time, like from August 21st to September 5th. So in like 14, 20 day span, you know, 15 day span, she's already run three 100s. Some people think about Usain Bolt era when he's only running like 100 every 2 months.
You look at her yearly marks, and the only time she was above 11 seconds in the 100 was that horrible weather day in Gateshead when she had to run heats and then finals and ran 11.6 and then 11.5 and into a -4 and then into a -3. But since then, 10.84, is that 10.63? 10.97, 10.84, 71, 82, 84, 73, 74, 73, 60, and then 81. So just ridiculously lights out season. You brought up a good point. Like, the Olympics were really just part of the story here when you look at what they've done post-Olympics. And I know you've been digging up those stats most times under 45 seconds for the men in the 400, but I bet you could compile a pretty narrow list of how many times Fraser Price has gone with sub 1085, I guess, if you want to put that the line right there this year. I mean, that's just
sub 1090. It's remarkable. Sub 1090.
I wanted to make it more exclusive, but that's okay. You can let more people into your group. That's fine.
I'm gonna figure that out right now. While you talk, I am slowly gonna see how many women have broken 1090 in one season. Because Shelly-Ann's done that a few times.
Yeah, and like I said, when you run 1080 after running 1060, the tendency is to be like, oh, okay, that was solid, that was fine, but nothing to write home about. But just as when Thompson Hurrah ran that 10.7 without Fraser Price, because she had run 10.5, we shrug our shoulders. But that level of consistency is just not – it's not the norm, by far not the norm. If you're watching live, you're getting to see that 100 again where – she just runs away from everybody in that last half of the race. But I hope we get to see her again. I have not seen her yet on the Diamond League final start list in Zurich in the 100. There's 7 women listed, not 8. I noticed that. And Thompson Hurrah is in it, but Fraser Price is not. It would be great to see them one more time. I don't know if she said anything post-race about her season and whether or not this was it. I hope we get to see it just one more time, because right now there are 7 women in there and Fraser Price is not one of them. Gordon, do you have the answer to the question?
I'm trying to figure it out. Hold on, give me one more second. But yeah, it's while I figure this out, why isn't Shelly-Ann and are they now dodging each other after us talking so happily about them, like, you know, running at each other race after race? Now it just seems like, do we see the last of Fraser Price and and Thompson in 2021?
I hope not, because we were very glowing in our praise that one episode, and then since then they didn't race. I hope I didn't jinx it, because it was tremendous. You look here at the head-to-head this year. Or sorry, head-to-head all time here in the 100, they've met 12 times, but we have 6 of those coming in 2021. But the last couple, we haven't seen them race each other. And if we don't see them in Zurich, that would be a disappointment just after the standard they've set. Again, if you judge them against history, still bears out. That's solid that we got to see the best two compete that frequently against each other, and 2 of the best 3 all time. But yeah, now I'm greedy. I want to see it one more time this year in 2021. I mean, we were very high on this rivalry. I thought it was a fun turn of events when Fraser Price finally got the win over Thompson Hurrah late in the season there. And I thought, okay, this is going to be interesting. They, you know, they combined for the first race with two women in the 10 sixes, just making history all over the place and multiple ways to make history, right? We're obviously looking at world record as being a possibility now, which we didn't think was the case going into the season. But then you have just the combination of them going at it and creating together, not just the fastest time maybe ever, but the fastest race and the fastest combination out there. So it was terrific to talk about. Yeah, I'm looking at all these clips now. We were very effusive in our praise here. So don't let us down. Just one more time. Please, one more time. Can we get Fraser Price and Thompson Hurrah lined up? I will not ask anything, I promise, of the women's 100 in 2022 if I could just get that one more time in 2021.
Okay, I have the stat, man. Should I send it to Travis so you can put it up on the screen, or should I just read it off?
Is it an impressive stat or not? Because if it's not, impressive. We could just forget. Okay, yeah.
It's impressive. However, there is the person up top isn't the person who leads this isn't a person that you want to be number one on the list, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
That makes sense. So what I did was I'll send this to Travis. I'm doing one last little I did this. I am very proud of myself. Boom. I'm going to screenshot. Boom. And I'm going to give to Travis in our little chat. Travis, where are you? Okay, so I looked at the number of the most wind legal sub 1090s run by a woman in one season. Mm-hmm. Carmelita Jeter in 2009 and 2012, Gwen Torrance in 1994, and Flojo in 1988 all did it six times in one season. Mm-hmm. Shelly Ann Fraser-Price in 2019 did it seven times. Elaine Thompson Hurrah in 2016 did it seven. Merlene Oddie in 1991 did it eight. Elaine Thompson Hurrah this year has done it 10 times. Shelly Ann Fraser-Price this year has done it 11 times. And number one overall is Miriam Jones in 1998 with 17 times. So number two all time with 11. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy to see that Shelly Ann and Elaine Thompson both have done it 10 plus times, both in the same season.
I got some good news while you were talking. Shout out to Marshall, sent me this link of Fraser Price after this meet in Poland, where she said, quote, "I was glad I was able to get the break." She's talking about where she missed the last Diamond League. "I needed it to regroup and come again. I'm back in the groove now and hoping the next two races, Zurich on September 9th and Bellinzona on September 14th, will be good." So she said she's run two more races per the IAAF report. Now, again, but I'll bring up that women's 100 start list there. She's not on it. And I would figure that would be one of the people meet directors would be trying to figure out, get a yes, yay or nay on. Like, has she responded to the Evite yet or no? Is it a yes, no, maybe? Is she in that third column there and she needs to be bumped into the yes? Please do that. If that's the case, please confirm that you're going to be there so we can get that updated start list here. But that's certainly good news that she's planning on running two more times.
That is. So she could increase that number to 13 in 2021. Mm-hmm. But yeah, both Elaine Thompson Hurrah and Shelly Ann, both 10 plus sub 1090s in 2021. Very impressive.
There you go. Good. And impressive by you to get the stat that quickly. Good job. That was not something we prepped in the meeting. One other thing I want to mention from Poland before we talk about Padua was Michael Cherry, sub 45 again. So two times in a row now, I've said he's gonna break break his streak in a good way, and he's continued his streak. So that's both good and bad news. Because he hasn't run a 45, but he also hasn't run a 43. But I think the 43 is coming in Zurich.
Yeah, you're putting a lot of eggs in the Zurich basket here with Michael Cherry running 43 seconds. I think he will. This race, he kind of was one of he's been slowly progressing to like 44 flat. This one was a little bit of a slower race for his standard. I mean, he did
shut it down.
You just want to question, like, how his legs not tired when you run 44 seconds so many times in one season. Like, a lot of times these guys want to save like a big 44 for one or two moments, but here he's out here doing it 13 times with a chance. If he runs, obviously he'll run the Diamond League final, run 44 at least there. That'll get him up to 14, which will put him top three all time. Right now, Roberto Hernandez in 1990 did it 16 times. Jeremy Warner did it 15 times in 2008. And then there's a four-way tie, which will soon become a five-way tie for third. Danny Everett, Harry Reynolds, LaShawn Merritt, Quincy Watts, and potentially Michael Cherry with 14. Sub 45, 400s. If you're in the same category as Merritt and Watts, oh, look at this. Michael Cherry, three more it is. He wants to go for three more to tie Roberto Hernandez.
There you go. You're influencing the racing decisions here, which is a scary thing. Yeah, I'm looking at Roberto Hernandez's 1990, and they were all in the 44s. He ran, his PB was 44.14 that year. That was his fastest of those 16. I think the way he's able to continue so long on this, well, number one, I just think, you know, he's got the experience at this point. But also, you just saw how he managed that race. He was in really good position with 100 to go and ran it like a heat of a championship race. He didn't go all the way through the last 50. So he's just saving little bits and pieces where he can. Now, you remember the last Diamond League, when he ran that 44 low, it was a little bit of an opposite dynamic. Kronie James was in that race, so it was a tougher field. But he was behind with 100 to go and then put on the jet. So he's measuring his efforts perfectly in order to get these wins and get these solid times out there. It's just a question of, yeah, does he have that little bit extra in Zurich to shave off those hundreds to get to 43? And I think he does, and I think he will.
What do you think is more likely to happen? Him running three more 44 seconds, or him winning the Diamond League?
Probably three more 44s, but I think he can win the Diamond League. I think, like, when you look at, we could talk about this later when we dive into it, but who's the most motivated? Because I think that matters at this point of the season. Who's the most motivated to keep going? And you look at that Diamond League final there, that's his U.S. championship for next year. Yeah, get it, and then you don't need to worry about all the anxiety and stress that comes along with trials. He didn't even need to run the 400. He just needs to show up at the meet. He could become the latest 400-meter runner to run the 100. That's a great incentive, because we're heading to a world where in 2024, no American 400-meter runners run the 400. Everybody runs
left.
The 100. They might even cancel the event at a certain point. There might be no 400-meter runners left, and Michael Cherry could do that and get in the 400 for world championships if he wins this Diamond League final. So I think he can do both, but I just think he's so locked in at 44. It's like, I'm not going to bet on it. Now, was that stat? The stat is most sub 45s in a year, right? So he'll get credit if he runs a 43?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, credit.
Because that would be a weird thing to punish him for. Like, he runs 43.8, and you're like, nope, sorry.
No. That's most sub 45s. So if people are at 43 seconds, that counts.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right, let's go over to Italy. Padua. So we had a women's 100 there featuring Sha'Carri Richardson, who was runner up to JV and Oliver. They both ran 11:19 into a minus 1.0. Candace Hill was third. English Garner fourth. Brandon Williams fifth. Desiree Bryant sixth. So I guess my question to you is, after pre, she said only place up from ninth is up. We saw what she did in the 200 in Brussels. This result, where she essentially, you know, ties, runs even with Oliver, who made the U.S. team this year, do you think this qualifies as a step up from what we saw in Brussels when she finished fourth in that 200?
No. I mean, this is an 11.11 if it had no wind. You know, it's not it's 11.11 with zero wind. She ran 11:19, but 11, The only reason her places are going up is because the field is going down. Like, the field competition is...
Oliver solid, though. Oliver made the team. Like, she's been solid.
She lost to her.
Yeah.
But, like, my main thing is, like, right now she's still running ninth place quality race runs, in my opinion. Like, following up her 11-14 ninth with an 11-19, which is really an 11-11, and her 22.4 or 5 in the 200. She's the same as she was at pre, in my opinion. She hasn't really improved. Have you thought? I mean, it's been like more low key. Like, it's not as, because there's,
yeah,
it's kind of like, oh, it's happening in a smaller meet in Europe, and like people are kind of stepping off the gas of Sha'Carri is going to dominate, you know, mm-hmm. and people are kind of letting her just kind of jog throughout the rest of the season. But she's mm-hmm. not in the Sha'Carri of running a 10-7 consistently or 10-8. She is still that Sha'Carri that got ninth, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit step forward. I know the time was not fast, but there's more to it than the wind, right? The weather, the conditions, all the other parts factor in. I just think she held it together through the race, at least, right? Like at pre, I think what you're saying is basically she could have run equivalent performance at pre if she pushed all the way through and finished it, right? Then, so this isn't showing us anything else. But I think the fact that she's at least coming out with a solid effort is something, and Oliver's a solid runner. But you're right. From the perspective of, this is not June Richardson. This is not May Richardson. This is not April Richardson. This is a different athlete. But the weird setup with the season and her having the suspension and coming back obviously has impacted her greatly. But yeah, I guess it's not the, okay, boom, 100% she's back. But see, I don't think, as I mentioned last time, I don't think we're going to get that until there's a complete reset on the year.
Yeah.
Because I think the trajectory is set at this point, and we know kind of where the ceiling is at this point. It's just hard to reverse course this late in a season, in a year with this many things going on. So I think we'll see it. So I guess it's positive in terms of, hey, she's still competitive. She's running the same time as one of the other best women in the year, or in her country, excuse me. The problem is, again, the Fraser Prices and the Thompson Arras of the world are doing 10-7s, 10-6s, 10-5s frequently. So it makes it tough. She did get an endorsement from Usain Bolt, which I think is cool.
Usain Bolt said, "I like her energy. She brings spice to track and field."
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
where did he say this? Is this the full quote?
Yeah. It says, "She does get people talking about track and field. So for me, that's something I personally feel is good for the sport, because track and field is not the biggest sport in the world that people actually go, you know what? Let's go watch track and field." That's a good quote by Bolt. You know what? Let's go watch track and field. We should make shirts with that on it. If Lincoln was still here, he'd have a shirt made up like by Wednesday with that quote on it. So for me, this is Bolt again. If they're talking about it basically because she's high energy and vibes, then for me, I'm okay with it. I think he sums it up pretty well there.
I like his kind of little bit of, like, you know, callback to her her marijuana ban. It's because she's high energy and vibes. So high energy and high vibes. You know, got
I think you may be looking a little too much into it. But your vibes are good. Vibes are positive. I mean, and obviously Bolt would know. Bolt was not nearly as polarizing. In fact, I feel like Bolt had near 100% approval rating, because the way he approached the sport was obviously different, and he never really showed any vulnerabilities at all. So he just kept winning and winning and winning and winning, save for a few times in his career. But in terms of getting eyeballs on the track, or as Bolt would say, getting people to say, you know what, let's go watch track and field, they do have that part in common.
So we talk about the little hypothetical mind experiment. How popular would our sport be if you took the Sha'Carri Richardson personality, situational drama, the social media presence, the being a part of, you know, Drake album and being in a Kanye West music video, all this stuff. And it was actually Usain Bolt in his prime doing it. Like Usain Bolt talking all this shit and doing this whole thing. Usain Bolt missing in an Olympics, you know, and then coming back and all this stuff. Like, how crazy do you think? Because one thing that's kind of was good for the Sha'Carri run was leading up to it, she had the talent to back it up. So you knew something exciting. But now you kind of, you're a little less excited to watch a race because you know you're not going to see a 10.8 or 10.7 or 10.6 because you know she's just not there right now. But like with Bolt, when he's like running, flirting with a 9.5 and the 9.6s, you knew there was potential greatness whenever he stepped on the track. Do you think if you combine the all-time greatness of Bolt's talents with the, you could argue, all-time greatness of Sha'Carri's branding, what did you get, like a super specimen?
Well, would Bolt, I feel like the trash talk, if he went so hard on it, would have been counterproductive because he was so good and so much better than everybody. It would have seemed a little out of place, don't you think?
Like he's too good to trash talk?
Basically. Yeah, because he's like, you all doubted me. Like if in 2012, if he said, you all doubted me after he won his second 100, 200 Olympic dub, we all would have been like, what? What are you talking about? Or, this was for the haters.
I mean, if Bolt that's ever what LeBron said that, James does every year. He thinks people are doubting him every year.
But he loses more, and a part of that's the nature of his sport. He actually loses. Bolt, you know, other than an 11 and then that last run, like, didn't lose, and even in the regular season he had very 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 few losses. I just think part of his persona, part of the thing that people were attracted to, was he transcended the sport and he did the fun stuff and he was charismatic and he would try to pick his spots in terms of talking trash, but he would really need to work hard to kind of find motivate. Like they'd have to dig out world relays clips of like Ryan Bailey celebrating ahead of him. And anytime you're using like the world relays as a basis for trash talk, it's not really that significant. But he would have needed a foil, I think. He would have needed somebody else to go that route, I think.
Yeah, like his, you see, like you're saying his dominance was kind of his own worst enemy for popularity because he was too good.
Well, it made him popular in one sense, but in another sense, it made it more.
I lost that last moment. You say popular in one sense. Why don't you refresh your browser, Kevin, and then you come back in because you're a little.
Yeah, we'll take a commercial break right after this. Kevin explains why Usain Bolt is better than Gordon.
So now it's just me. Here's my water I'm drinking. It's classic tap water, but I got this little bottle from Louisville during the NCAA cross country championship in 2015, and I haven't lost it yet. So anyway, you're back and your connection's better.
Thank you. So as I was saying, Usain Bolt, good. Usain Bolt, good. We'll have more at the top of the hour. No, all I'm saying is everybody has to do, like, the way to maximize everybody's public appeal, I think, is unique. Not everybody has the same path to doing it. For her, this is getting her a lot of attention. For Bolt, it almost felt like he was maxed out. And I think something like that, I don't know if it would have made that big of a difference, just because, as I said, I saw him more as a transcendent figure. Like, no, this is interesting about Bolt. Did Americans cheer against Bolt?
Not really.
No. And when the Olympics were on and non-track fans were watching it, because I think track fans obviously appreciated it and were in awe of it, but non-track fans who tuned in the Olympics to root for the USA, I don't think any of them were mad when Bolt won, because there was just no question that Bolt was the best. And they also knew Bolt and they didn't know any of the Americans. So he had, like I said, almost universal approval rating. So it's very different in terms of how he brought eyeballs versus how Richardson is bringing eyeballs to the sport. Maybe that's a sign of the times, but I think it's also just a sign of the personality differences of the two athletes.
Agreed. Should we talk about Diamond League coming up? Oh no, one more race. Michael Norman.
Yeah, so Michael Norman ran in Italy as well, 9.97. So he ended the year with three sub tens in a row here, and he beat Bracey, beat Baker, beat Gatlin. I don't know if this is enough to make him have a tough decision about what to do next year. And it's a bummer that he's shutting down a season. I would like to see him try to run another quarter now that he's reeled off three sub tens in the 100. But he's right in that weird middle ground, I feel like, Gordon, right? He's good enough. He's done enough in the 100 where you'd be curious about him in that event and the 200. And then he's also struggled enough in the 400 to where you're like, Ed, do you really want to stick with the 400? Do you want to explore what else is going on out there? He's firmly in that gray area, I think.
Yeah, I think the question for him, like, I wonder how much of an influence what Fred Curley has done is going to impact him at all, you know, because for him seeing his fellow competitor just go from a great 400 meter runner to like a dominant 1-2 guy in an Olympic year.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he's thinking like, hey, I can do that, or maybe Fred is showing, hey, it's possible to like get into that realm. You don't have to be a 60-meter, 100-meter guy from age 16 in order to become a great 100-meter runner. It is possible late in a career or mid-career to kind of transition to a different event if you have that raw talent. And you know Norman has the raw talent. He's run 43 seconds. He's run 9.8 in a race. So it's not like it's impossible to do these things. I think the difference between him and Fred is Fred obviously has gone all in on it, right? He started beginning the season going all in on the 1 and the 2, whereas Norman hasn't really gone all in at all in the 100 or the 200. It's kind of just been like a half measure. Like, oh, let's dip my feet in after the Olympics, see what I can do. But hey, it would be interesting if he decides to like pull the trigger and be like, I'm out of the 400 and go all in on attempting to get in the 1 or the 200.
The 2 is the most intriguing, don't you think? Do you agree with me? The 2 is the most interesting prospect here.
Yeah, I feel like his 200 would be his most likely pathway to success on the global level. Because he has, I mean, 19.7 is a no joke time. He ran in 2019, and he's beaten Noah Lyles head to head in a 200. So, and if Noah Lyles is like the standard, right? He's a 19.5 guy. So if you're in the category with Noah, you know you're going to be in the category of potential meddling, you know? So
I think if the 200 for the US looked like the 400 does for the US in terms of competition, I think it would be a no brainer for him to put his focus there. But the problem is the 200 is so good with Lyles, Curley, Bednarik, Knighton, that it makes qualifying really difficult. Now they'll have an extra spot next year because Noah's got the bye. So he just need to figure out a way to get into that group. And then internationally, you would throw into grass there. But I'm interested how he can have pretty solid performances across the board in the 100, like outperform what we thought he was capable of and beat some really quality people and then still struggle in the quarter. And maybe it's just because, hey, post Olympics, it's harder to get a gauge on things. And yeah, he didn't run well in the Olympics in the 400, but he still was fifth in the world. And maybe fifth in the world would be his ceiling in the 100 too. Maybe we're just overrating these 100 meter performances because we're just thinking about what's possible. Oh, and this is only his third race doing it, his fourth race doing it. Look at how much better he could get. Maybe he's kind of set in that spot, but it is interesting both with him and Curley, just how smooth the transition felt. And they're both, and I get why they didn't do it really in college, because you're focused on team points and stuff, but it is interesting that you become a pro and you're like, all right, I'm gonna do another event now. Like, I'm really gonna drill down. And then you had all these years in college to try to experiment, and it was always just like 4x4, 400, 200, 4x4, 400, 200.
I have a question for you.
Did Michael Norman run at 100 at USC?
I don't know. I know he ran the 100 in high school. His first race as a college guy in indoor was a 200, but I'm not sure if he ran 100.
There's nothing on his T first. He didn't run a. He ran a 4x1 leg a couple times. That was it.
Here's a question for you.
Yep.
If we could get this event to happen, I want to see Fred Curley race Michael Norman in a 4-race event over a weekend. I want to see them race each other in 100, a 200, a 300, and a 400 in a weekend. So I don't know how you split it up. You probably do a 1 and a 3 and a 2 and a 4, or a 1 and a 4 and a 2 and a 3. Do they tie 2-2? Does one win 3-1? Does one win 4-0? How do you think it plays out with a Curley Norman 100, 200, 300, 400 quadruple header?
I mean, the last year I would have said Norman, but now I'd go Curley. But I want to add more people to this event.
No.
Lyles and Bednarik?
No, because Lyles and Bednarik aren't 400-meter runners. And Bednarik has run a good 400 in college. But it's all about these 400-meter guys changing events. What? Let's play it out.
We have an 8-lane track. Why can't you let me fill the 8-lane track?
Because I want just head-to-head. All I care is the Norman and Curley factor. That's all I care about. That's all I care. I want two lanes.
Can I add Rye Benjamin?
No.
For a player to be named
Curley
later.
And Norman. Stop changing my imagination. This is my world, and I'm going to live in it. This race is let's pretend the race is happening next weekend. So it's not like, oh, well, Curley was running this in 2019, so whatever.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Who would win the 100 if it was happening next weekend? I think that's an easy one.
Curley,
right?
Yeah.
Who would win the 400 if it was happening next weekend?
I mean, that's tough.
I think it would be Norman. It has to. Because Curley has run a...
That's his... It's his best chance. That's his best chance, though, Norman. So, okay.
Let's give it to Norman. All right.
I'll concede that, yes.
Okay. The 200. Probably give it to Curley now?
Yeah, I go with Curley. Yeah.
All right.
Next year, maybe different. And then in the past, maybe different. But right now, I go with Curley. 300. Well, I mean, I would go Curley. That's why I would have it 3-1 right now.
3-1?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, yeah.
However, Noah Lyles was in the race. No, sorry.
That'd be a fun event to bet on.
Yeah. Do you have it going the other way? Do you have it 2-2?
I could see it being 2-2. But I also could see it being 4-0 Curley. Mm-hmm. It's either going to be 2-2 Norman Curley or 4-0. I think either Curley goes 4-0 or he's like, all right, 2-2.
2-2, yeah.
I don't think he'll get a 3-1.
The 300 would be tricky. I just don't know what to expect right now if Norman ran another quarter, and we're not going to know because his season's over. I just don't know what he's capable of. You know, through all these sub tens, are they going to do they mean he's all right, super duper sharp, and he's going to run like sub 44 or 44 low, or is it just not indicative of any? Like, I'm assuming when Norman ran his PB of 43.45. In April 2019, he was probably in really good 100-meter shape. He just wasn't running 100 then, too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We don't realize how good they are at other events sometimes because these PRs would move in tandem. Yeah. But they're not running a PR in the 100 because they're running the 400 then. Like they can't. Yeah. They're not doing multiple things all at once. But the 43.45, I'm sure it was indicative that he would have run sub-10. But... And now he's well under sub 10, and now he's running 44 lows and he's still able to go sub 10. So I don't know what to read into it, but I would have Curley 3-1. That would be in our quadathon.
Can I talk about one more thing about Fred Curley?
Quadathon.
Travis, you can bring this up. Have you seen that Fred Curley is offering NFTs? Travis, Google NFT Fred. Google NFTs. NFT Fred Curley and bring up his website.
I haven't seen much NFT news recently. Do you have any NFTs?
Website? I did not purchase one. They were a little bit out of my price range. Trayvon Bromell bought one. He, for those who don't know, an NFT is like a trading card that's digital where you can kind of, you buy it and then you can resell it. But mm-hmm. it's just basically a mini GIF or video that you pay for. But Frank Curley put up this whole website. I think it's kind of wild, like the pricing. Check out how expensive a Fred Curley NFT is. Travis, can you bring up the website? I just want to show the people. No, just Google NFT Fred Curley. It'll be the top thing. NFT Fred Curley. The second link. Yeah. Boom. Okay. So check this out. So scroll down. Let's put this up on the screen. So you can buy his Phase 9 silver medal for $984.
Not his actual silver medal.
No, it's just a video of a silver medal. You can do his Phase 19 video card for $1,980. People are buying the Phase 42 card for, because it's only $42.
Mm-hmm.
But if you scroll all the way down, he's selling, look, he's already preparing for a world record. He has the Say No More, which is a poster, for $9,840. Let's do it. You want to go in, Travis?
Well, and Lincoln.
Kevin? Let's
Lincoln,
go three ways.
Lincoln would be the one to buy it because he lives in Taylor, Texas. So he would be the one to make the purchase. Aren't some of these things, like, people are selling NFTs for millions of dollars. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. Oh, some people, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so I don't understand the pricing. That's in general of any NFT. I don't get the pricing at all with any of this stuff. Didn't they sell like an image of the first tweet ever? I know there's a New York Times writer that sold an article about NFTs and he donated the money to charity. And I think he made the first, it was like $500,000, like a picture of the article, basically.
I think it's a way for people to show that they have money, maybe. It's like, hey, look at me. I wasted this money on a digital video that I can just look at by clicking on the URL. But I can now say I own. It's a way to say you own a digital piece of content.
Yeah. Did you ever look at that Top Shot stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I was looking. Yeah. Same, when people were buying these thing, right? Random digital. Yeah. Yeah digital yeah. Basketball cards, basically.
Yeah. But people would make jokes, right? So-and-so would miss a free throw and like, oh, let me get the Top Shot of Aaron Baines missing a free throw. It's like, but some of them were selling for just ridiculous amounts of money. So auction ends 27 days. So it's a lot of time. Yeah. A lot of time to get in there. All right. Do you want to talk about Zurich Diamond League final, which is going to be on Thursday? So we're going to do our Wednesday show at the regular time. And then Thursday, we're going to be going at 3 p.m. Central after that meet, which is going to be a marathon affair. It's going to be 3 hours long. It actually starts on Wednesday with the 5,000 and then some field events as well. But then you go to Thursday and it's everything, every single event in the Diamond League, men and women, all the way through. So I wanted to run through just a few races today while we still have time. For sure, the 5,000s and the – well, let's try to get to all these. Let's start with 5,000. Do you want to do 5,000 first? It's interesting because we're running on that 500-meter out of the track facility. So that'll be unique. Jakob Ingebrigtsen is headlining the men's field there. He's going for the double. He's entered in both the 5,000 on Wednesday and then the 1,500 on Thursday. Solid field here. Salomon Berega, gold medalist in there. You also have Yomi Kajelka, Nicholas Camelli. I don't know, Gordon, who is going to be most impacted by the fact that this is not on a regular track. But I would guess it would favor people who are like, this is just a race. Like, throw out the times. I don't need any of the markers. This is going to be really confusing. Splits are going to be really hard to figure out here. Let's just get out there and race. So obviously I would say that Ingebrigtsen here is the solid favorite.
Yeah. I don't recall remembering the design of the track, but what does the last 200 meters of the track look like?
I think Travis, can you pull this up? That people tweeted out a picture. I want to get it accurate, but if, I don't know, if you put like Zurich Diamond League 5,000 final on Twitter, I think there's an image up there. But it's just, I mean, it's relatively track-like, right? But there are some turns. There are some turns on it. I don't know if I'm able to pull this up, but
do you ever get to turn right?
Yes.
Really?
I think so.
Let me turn right.
Because
then that's when you have to work on tangents. Then you get to turn right.
Yeah, I can't find it.
I'll find it.
Keep going. Oh, yeah, keep going. Oh.
Diamond League 2021 outdoor 5,000 meters.
Yeah, someone asked in the chat, is it? It's not on a regular track. It's a street race. Yeah, it's outside the stadium. So they're doing it, I think, in the exact same area where they're doing a lot of these field events out of the stadium, which is weird and somewhat controversial because, hey, this is a Diamond League final. This is an actual track race and theoretically one of the higher stakes ones of the entire year, and you're putting it in a different setup than you are every other race. Now, especially for the Kenyans and the Ethiopians, you know, a bye is on the line here. Okay, here we go. So we have it. No, it does not look like there is any right-handed turns here. It just looks oddly shaped. But like, look at how sharp some of those turns are, right?
I wonder if there's going to be an opportunity in, like, if you look on
560 meters,
like behind the building, where you're not going to be seen. Mm-hmm. And then that's your opportunity to do a little, you know, extracurricular activity with your competition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I want to know. And turn into like kind of like a roller derby type situation. You know what I mean? Give them a bunch of helmets.
I think they'll have cameras in there as well. So 560 meters. So it'll be, I don't know, doing the math here. How many laps would that be, Gordon?
Like nine.
Nine. Nine laps. So, you know, there's been street races out there. I get this. This is they're laying down a track here, but it will not be the full. I mean, it will not be a regular race. What do you think about changing? Like, put aside all your thoughts on the Diamond League in general. What do you think about, hey, this is one of the most important races of the year, and we're changing the way it's conducted this dramatically?
First of all, the way you opened up that sentence is not true. It is not one of the most important races of the year.
No, theoretically it is. No, but okay, hold on. Stop for a second. Say, for example, you had three Americans in this race who were going for a wild card berth. It would be very important. Now, that's not actually happening, so you have to suspend disbelief a little bit. But, like, do you like it? Doesn't matter.
I like it. It doesn't bring any ounce of negativity to my brain. I just think it'll be interesting. Like, well, all right, it gets me one to watch it. I'll watch it. Mm. Now, I don't think this is a way to like grow the sport and make it more popular because, whoa, we did it on the street. Whoa, people are now interested in track and field. No. But the Diamond League is not, as I went on a 20-minute rant last week, it's not like a sacred cow that can't be manipulated because the athletes aren't like, you know, there's no, will this count towards times? I don't think it will matter because everyone in the field will be able to get their marks wherever before or after. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. It would be interesting though, if we see like an incredible fast time and then like, we have to be like, well there's an asterisk on it and all this
crazy. I mean, look at how long that straightaway is, or those straightaways on both sides. That's going to be massive. Someone's going to mistime it thinking it's just 100 meters to go. Yeah. And then with about 50 meters to go, completely run out of gas. So I think Ingebrigtsen's going to win here. On the women's side, though, Gordon, we get to see Nian Saba again. See if she can continue her hot streak. Field is tough, though, again, right? She's got Obiri. She's got Rengurik. She's got Tay in there. So she's got people that are gonna push her. Do you think she's able to continue her dominance for one more week?
Yeah, she's gonna win, and I'm upset that I know I told Safwan Hassan she needs to chill out and relax and go on vacation, but I want to see her race Nian Saba. right? Because right now, the only one who we think can beat Nian Saba is Hassan. And
yeah.
We had an opportunity for them to be in the same race, and they're not in the same race. So mm-hmm. I'm a little bummed about this. I wanted that. I mean, no one else in this field has shown any like justification that they can beat Nian Saba. Like, Nian Saba has beaten everyone in this race, that in this mm-hmm. field. She's done it over a shorter distance. She's now done it over the 5K. It's game, set, match. This is I wish I could bet on this. I can make back my $277 I lost, and I can go all in on Nian Saba.
So you're confident in her on the 560 meter track to get it done?
Yeah. Same conditions for everyone.
She's got a pretty wide portfolio here, right? The success in the 800, then she gets fifth in the 10K, then she does what, 2 mile at Prix, 3,000, and now a 5,000 on a regular track, and now she's going to 5,000 on a 500 plus meter track here. She's doing a little bit. Everything's a little bit different each time, right? There's no two things are identical here. Yeah, she just seems like she's running with so much confidence, and I think everybody's rightly concerned about her kick and if she's in the mix in that last lap or last half a lap, I guess you'd have to say here with how big the track is, then she's being in a good spot. I do think Obiri and some of the others will look at this larger track as an opportunity to try to shake her earlier, right? And maybe just because it has a little bit more of a road vibe, that things won't bunch up as much. I think that's what they're going to be hoping for. You mentioned Safwan Hassan. We can transfer to the women's 1500 real quick, because you're not getting Safwan Hassan in the 5000, but you're getting her in the 1500 against Faith Kipyegon. That's pretty good, right? I mean, those three have matched up a bunch of times this year, and every time they do, it's a classic.
Why do you think Safwan Hassan chose the 15 to go up against Faith Kipyegon, who looks like she's not going to be beat, over choosing the 5K?
Revenge. Pure, unadulterated revenge. Yeah, she wants to beat her. We know Safwan Hassan is the best in the world in the 5. We know she's the best in the world in the 10. 1500? It's Kipyegon. And you can say, all right, if Safwan Hassan didn't have the other races in her legs, then she would have kept it closer. But she's also beaten her straight up in a Diamond League race, and Kipyegon has the claim as the best women's miler of all time. I mean, they had that cool race in Italy early in the year. They had the one in Monaco where Kipyegon blew her out. And then obviously in Tokyo, Hassan faded to the bronze. But I think Safwan Hassan is all about doing unprecedented things. I think that's what motivates her. And checking off boxes is a high priority to her, and answering questions that are asked of her, right? So there's the 15 and the 10 was crazy, but she did it just because I feel like it had never been done before. And then once she does that, okay, I can't go back from that. So what am I going to do? Oh, I'm going to do a triple that very few people have ever attempted, and no one has been as successful as me in history at completing. Okay, then what do you do after the Olympics? Oh, I'm going to go for a 5K world record. Oh, you missed it. That, what are you going to do? Okay, now I'm going to go for the mile world record. So it makes sense. If she goes and she wins the 5,000, it's like, all right, she's expected to. She goes and she knocks off Faith Kipyegon in the 1500. That's a story.
I just got a text. I got some breaking news. You ready for the breaking news? The USATF 20K championship just happened in New Haven, Connecticut. And on the men's side, our boy, Ben True, won.
Yeah, that happened like an hour ago. That wasn't really breaking news, but...
Oh, okay.
All right.
I thought that was interesting. Beat some good guys. Beat Leonard Carrier.
Of course, Ben True's good at a 10K.
BS in Basel.
Okay.
I mean, it's 20K. He's not...
I mean, the longer the distance goes for him, he gets a little... Good for him. Credit for him. Is that worth interrupting the Kipyegon Hassan? I thought when I heard breaking news, I was just like, I could grab my desk here. I was worried. I don't know if that was worth interrupting the Kipyegon Hassan segment for. Hassan in the 1500 all time, 9-8, the edge over Faith Kipyegon. So that's a great stat. So she's putting that on the line here. I mean, I'm with you. It's awesome. It would be awesome to see her in the five against Nian Saba. But if she had to pick one, I like the 1500. If she had to pick
one. Also, her picking the 1500 shows she's not scared. Like,
yes,
she knows she probably would win the 5K. So the fact that she's putting herself out there for another potential loss shows the type of mindset that she has, which is, you know, I'm not going to dodge competition. And now that I look back on it, I'm kind of happy that she's not trying to do a 5K, then come back and do the 1500 because
she doesn't need to be
doubling and tripling and doing all this stuff anymore. She just needs to go out, run a race, win it or lose it, and then go home, read and have a nice ice bath and take a long, long vacation.
Yeah. That's all we're asking. This is going to be, even if she was fresh, it's hard to beat Faith Kipyegon. And then she's coming in after doing two world record attempts after a triple. So this is gonna be very challenging. So I would expect Kipyegon to win. On the men's side, do you think Ingebrigtsen can pull off this 5-15 double?
So
here's the 15.
In the field. Our boy Stuart McSwain, Mr. Always in the mix, but always not in the mix in the final 50 meters is there. So he'll make sure it's honest.
Until he won.
I think Ingebrigtsen, I mean, I've said it, right? I've predicted he's not losing a race until like 2024. So you got to keep that streak going. So I think he's going to win. Chariot doesn't look like the old Chariot of 2019 yet. So,
yeah.
And the rest of the guys, you know, they're good. Like Hoare and McSwain are both running well. Katir had a moment, but hasn't been running too well. But outside of that, I mean, it looks like it's just going to be a McSwain Ingebrigtsen Chariot race. And like, if Josh Kerr was in it, maybe I would get a little, all right, if it gets tactical, watch out for Kerr. But no, I mean,
do you remember
the depth of quality 1500 meter competition isn't there right now, so I'll go with Ingebrigtsen all the way.
Do you remember pre when Ingebrigtsen took off and Chariot just didn't go with him and he stayed back? That was an interesting tactical decision, and I just want to know how he responds to this one. Does he do the same thing, and is it just going to be McSwain the only one pursuing Ingebrigtsen? Because they're coming off, he's going to be coming off a five the night before. This is an important race, I think, for everybody else in the 1500. Because if you can't beat Ingebrigtsen after he runs the 5K a few hours before, you're going to have trouble making a case for why you're going to beat him in 2022. So I think this is an important race for those people who are contenders. It's as important as a September race can possibly be a month after the Olympics. But I think it is critical. And I think the way to win is Chariot's going to have to go back to the old way of racing. He's got to turn the screws on him early. And he's going to have someone to go with him if he decides to push the pace. Because again, Stuart McSwain has never said no when people have asked him, hey, do you want to push the pace? The answer is always yes with Stuart McSwain. So Chariot's got to get out there and really force it to try to run the legs off of Ingebrigtsen here after his 5K.
Yeah, this is definitely an embarrassment test, right? Will you or will you not be embarrassed by Ingebrigtsen? Because if he does win, it's going to be kind of embarrassing because you're losing now to the guy who's still only 20, coming off a 5K, and you still can't get it done. It's going to be the embarrassment test. And Chariot, based on his pedigree, should be able to be like, no, young Padawan. I am going to continue to try to dominate this event. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and again, I'm just, and as I'm curious as much about how he runs as to the result, because he wasn't running with a ton of confidence at pre. It looked like he was content with that second pack. And Ingebrigtsen for a long time had been the guy in that second pack or the guy trying to chase Chariot. And we know their result all time, 10-1. Chariot over Ingebrigtsen, so he's got to start another streak, and that's the 15. So you add the mile here, and it's 10-2. So Ingebrigtsen's on a two race win streak here. You famously said he's never going to lose to him again. In fact, you said Ingebrigtsen's never going to lose another race in his life. He's going to run.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I said until like 2023, 2024.
Gotcha. Until 2 years in the future that Gordon is not yet confirmed which one, 2023 or 2024, one of the two. Okay, before we go, I want to do the hundreds. Let's talk about the hundreds, and then we'll save everything else for Wednesday. Does that sound good?
Yeah, let's do it. Sorry for interrupting the podcast with my New Haven 20K results. I didn't see Jenny Simpson. Did Jenny Simpson finish?
I thought she was running Cherry Blossom.
I thought she was in this 20K. Okay. No. See, I don't even know. I'm not even paying attention the right way.
I thought you'd be kind of big on the whole Northeast road racing scene, but apparently not. So we need to fix that. Men's 100 in the Diamond League final. We have Ronnie Baker. We have Fred Curley. We have Trayvon Bromell. And we have Andre DeGrasse. You can see the full field right there on your screen. Gordon, this is going to be great because we've seen how sharp DeGrasse and Curley have been post-Olympics. How do you think this race goes?
Before we talk about how this race goes, how did a man who's run 10:15 and a man who's run 10:22 get in the Diamond League final?
Did we have enough no's to where they just said, all right, you guys can go? Is that how that worked?
I don't know. But, like, isn't that kind of crazy? No? Don't you think that's
No, that's very crazy. In? That's not kind of crazy. That's very crazy. Are they holding lanes for home meet runners a little bit? Is that what's going on?
I guess the Sylvain Wiki, because it's in Switzerland, he's like there, but... Okay, I guess that guy, they went all the way down to the 14th person on the descending order list. And this guy, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his name, Abikun Udimyalislag, from a country that I don't know, SRI. Do you know what country that is?
Sri Lanka.
He got fourth place in June Diamond League 100, which is super random. I don't know how that happened. But this guy's in a Diamond League final. He only ran in one Diamond League, gets fourth in it, and now he's in the final because all these other guys dropped out. It's kind of wild.
So what do you think in terms of put that up again? Okay, here's the profile here. It is weird so many people didn't want to go to that for the 100. Right. For the 100, that seems a bit strange.
Hey.
Okay.
Let's preview the actual races, which will be like five guys. But I thought that was interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, you obviously have Curley and DeGrasse both being incredible post-Olympics. And then I think you got to hold out a little bit of a shot for Bromell because he's looked better than he did in the Olympics, and he has the 9.7 from earlier in the year. Baker, we just mentioned earlier in the show, suffered that loss in Italy. So I would say it's between those three.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Baker's performance in Italy kind of takes him off my big board for potential winners. And Sebene kind of hasn't really been running too well post-Olympics either. So yeah, Curley, DeGrasse, and Bromell are the big three, in my opinion. And they all kind of, I would say, DeGrasse and Curley have looked a little bit better than Bromell. So if I were betting odds, I would say the betting odds would put Curley and DeGrasse probably even odds. And then Bromell third, right? I don't think there's a clear favorite between Curley and DeGrasse. Because while Curley has found a way to improve upon his silver medal by running well in these Diamond Leagues, DeGrasse also has been improving on his gold 200 by running well post-Olympics as well. And also, I think he beat Curley at Prix. They were in the same event.
Prix, yes. Yeah.
So you have to based off of resume, you have to say it's DeGrasse favorite, Curley 1B favorite, right? And then Bromell third.
Yeah, that tracks. I mean, DeGrasse, you say he's in the best stretch of his career, coming off the gold and the silver performance the gold and the bronze in Tokyo, and then backing it up with the, albeit wind-aided, but victory of a lot of big names at Prix with the 974. So he's in a real good spot right now. The only question is, okay, can he hold it for one more meet? And then we know what Curley's been doing. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a reason why we said right now best combo sprinter is DeGrasse.
Yeah.
And it's because of just the marks that we've been talking about in the big meet performances that he's had. So I think you're right. Those two, it's very interesting to see what Bromell is going to do here, because his last race, he was close. He was there. He was close. I wonder if it's just a matter of something, that final piece clicking into place for him, and he's able to have that strong last 50. Or maybe it's been a long season. Fatigue is weighing on him, and it's going to be tough to get to recapture what he had in April, May, and June.
Yeah. After Prefontaine, we kind of anointed DeGrasse as the best male sprinter. And it felt kind of out. He had the two medals, and he just won the Prix against Curley and a bunch of other guys.
Mm-hmm.
But Curley has had a reason to say he's better. Like, he's built up a resume to go up against now DeGrasse. And if Curley can come out and beat DeGrasse in the Diamond League final, are they racing again in the 200?
No.
They're not?
No.
Are either of them racing the 200, or are they all just going all in on the one?
They're all going all in on the 200, okay. which will preview. No, sorry. My apologies. They are racing. Oh, this is great.
They're racing the 200.
This is great. Okay, so, let's just say the belt is on the line, Gordon. Is that what we're saying here? The belt is on the line in Zurich.
Because if Curley goes out here and beats him back to back, I'm sorry. First of all, Jacobs of Italy, it's been good, but you let go of the throne by choosing not to run post Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
If this is basically we are seeing in one day the crowning of the best sprinter of 2021, whoever comes victorious. I think if it's a split, I think it will go to DeGrasse.
Mm-hmm.
If Fred Curley wins both, it'll go to Curley. Ben Narek is probably in the 200. Is he in the 200 probably?
He is, but not in the 100.
Ben Narek probably can kind of ruin a bit of Fred Curley's chance. Because if Fred Curley wins the 100, then beats DeGrasse but gets second in the 200, it's not going to feel as, shining of a back-to-back win. But this is – we're going to know who the best sprinter in the world of 2021 will be. It's going to be either Fred Curley or Andre DeGrasse, and we'll have two races kind of figure it out. And Kenny B could also go on and win the 200 and be like, hey, guys, don't forget about me. Kenny B, I got second in the two,
If he drops something crazy in the 200 and those other two guys struggle, yeah, for sure. This is great. This is what we want to see. It's on the line here in Zurich. And that 200 – again, we'll go more in depth on it on Wednesday. But Narek, DeGrasse, Curley, that's going to be awesome. That's going to be awesome there. Missing a couple people, but we're going to focus on who's there. It's going to be awesome. All right, women's 100, and then we'll leave it there. Women's 100. So as we mentioned at the top, as of this recording, I'm refreshing right now. Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce is still not there. She said post her last race, she's going to run two more races, and one of them was going to be Zurich. But right now, Thompson, Hurrah, Tolu, Oliver, Netta, Kambunji, Del Ponte, and Dina Asher-Smith. So as it stands right now, it's a rout, it's a runaway, it's a blowout for Elaine Thompson, Hurrah, and it'll just be about the clock. If Fraser-Pryce is there, the whole game changes.
Should we do two virtual previews for this? Should we do two scenarios. A scenario where it's just Elaine, and a scenario where it's Elaine and Shelly-Ann. Okay, so let's do the Just Elaine scenario. The Just Elaine scenario, 10:54, her season's best and her PB, and a number two-time all-time. Are we going to see a four on the clock?
Just her? I do not think we will see it with just her. I think it becomes really difficult. I think we'll see something similar to what we saw in Brussels. What's, let me, trivia question for you, Gordon. Fastest time.
Oh, we lost you, Kevin. We lost you. You're going to have to refresh. Kevin, you got to refresh your, we lost you. Refresh your browser. You, right when you said fastest time, then you went out.
In
trivia. Hit me with the trivia.
Wind legal. What do you think the fastest time in history is, women's 100?
In Zurich?
Yep.
Is it 10:49?
No, that was in Indianapolis. Come on, Gordon. What are you doing? 10:49.
I don't know.
World record. 10:76. 10:76. Okay. So fast, but not crazy fast. I'm just looking at the history here. So I don't think in scenario A, where Fraser-Pryce doesn't run, I don't think the world record is going to go down. I think we could see a low 10:6 again, and I think we'll see a huge victory, but I don't see it going down. Do you disagree?
No, I agree.
Okay. Scenario two.
I think we had a chance at the world record. I don't think it's happening. I think it just, after the pre just felt like the crescendo. Like, you had the pre, right? And you had the Sha'Carri situation, you had the Jamaican 1-2-3 and running also extremely fast. And I think ever since pre, it's kind of just been like, we're on cruise control. I think we've been on
Fraser Price ran faster after pre.
Yeah, but Elaine Thompson didn't, and she's the one who won.
True, but Lazon was amazing. The 10:6 to 10:64. Was amazing. And I think we could get something similar to that.
I think we had something if like she's that. There. Yeah.
And maybe they flip places this time, and it's Thompson Hara running 10:60 and it's Fraser Price running 10:64. But I think it's gonna be really tough to equal a 10:5. That sort of performance is gonna be tough. Now, you asked me, what would Fraser Price have to do? Speaking of the belt, could Fraser Price do anything in this race to get it?
It's hard.
The 2021 belt.
Travis, yeah, can you bring up the 2021 performance lists where you include all biathlete in the 100? So this is only the 100 meter belt. That's what we're doing. Okay. When you look at this screenshot, it looks very even, right? Because it's literally every other athlete is each other, right? It goes Elaine, then Shelly, Elaine, Shelly, Elaine, Shelly, Elaine, Sha'Carri, Elaine, Shelly, Shelly, Sha'Carri, Shelly. So Shelly has a bunch in that back half, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shelly Ann has the 11 sub 1090s to Elaine's 10 sub 1090s. So obviously right now, the first name on the list is Elaine Thompson. So that is Elaine. I don't think we're going to see a faster time. So I think Elaine Thompson is going to be able to say, I had the fastest time of the year. Elaine is also going to be able to say, I won the Olympic gold medal.
Which is where it ends for me.
The fastest time and the gold medal. What Shelly Ann could have, though, is more faster times, like a faster top five average, which is good. That shows consistency. You're not just a flash in the pan. She can also show that she won more head-to-head, right, this year.
Yeah.
If you take out semifinals, think if she were to win this Diamond League, and they would race one more time. So she could have potentially a head-to-head argument, a consistency argument. I think in order for Shelly Ann, when more and more you think about it, in order for Shelly Ann to have the 2021 throne, she needs to win this race and run 10:53. Just beat it by 0.01. Then I would say you have to get the throne back to Shelly Ann.
I don't think that would even do it for me because really? I put so much weight in the Olympics. I think she would need to do something ridiculous these last two races.
She would need like 10:49. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, and then another 10:50 or something like that. Like that's where I would put
no. the bar.
Yeah.
If she just runs 10:49 once, that she's no, that's done.
No,
she tied the world record. No, it's over.
I don't. I would still give it to Thompson Arnold. Also, no one looks at it like who's the best just 100 runner. They're gonna look at it as sprinter, and then you got to factor in the 200 stuff where Thompson Arnold is way better this year with the 21.5 and with the gold medal.
I just think you're saying if Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce were to break the world record, you would not consider her the best sprinter of 2021.
No, I would still have Thompson Hurrah. I saw Thompson Hurrah.
That's wild.
Yeah, and I didn't think I was gonna say that.
That's a take.
I didn't think I was gonna, again, to reiterate what I said a month ago, it's not as if Thompson Hurrah ran her season best as 10:08 and she had a crazy fluky 100-meter win at the Olympics, right? She's proven time and time again how fast, and her PB, her season best at its slowest is going to be 10:54. So say Fraser-Pryce does run 10:48, gets the outright record. So she has a faster season best by 0.06, but Thompson Arnold's got the golds. And that's where I'm putting the weight here, considering everything else. I mean, look at her, like, I mean, 10:50, because you can flip it around and say, okay, so you're not going to say the best 100 meter woman of the year would be a woman who's run 10:54, 10:61, and 10:64 and won the gold in a blowout, like the most important race in a blowout. Like that's also crazy too.
No, but like I also think you're just
trying to make me sound crazy.
You're admitting that once you have the Olympics, nothing else matters ever, and like that kind of sucks. No, like why are we watching these races?
If they can't. If that was the case, then we wouldn't have just had this whole thing about DeGrasse and Curley vying for the best sprinter. We'd be saying it's Marcel Jacobs and it's over. But Marcel Jacobs' season and Elaine Thompson-Hurrah's season could not be more different based on head-to-head versus other people, all-time quality marks. It's not close at all. And again, if Thompson-Hurrah ran three races this year and one of them was the Olympic final and she won it in 10:08 and then Fraser-Pryce went on and broke the world record, I would agree with you. But she didn't do that. She's run 10:54. She's beat her a bunch of times head to head. She's run the 10:61. Theoretically, she's going to run really close to whatever Fraser-Pryce runs in Zurich as well, too. So she's going to put up another all-time mark there. Listen, extraordinarily complex and historical seasons call for extraordinarily complex takes. And I didn't think that I would ever say breaking the women's world record wouldn't make you the best 100-meter runner of the year. But this is the situation we're in because they've both been so good. Don't make me sound crazy. It's not crazy.
No, I'm going to make you sound crazy. I get your point that Elaine Thompson has such a great resume that a world record alone won't beat it. I get that. Yeah. But like, if Shelly-Ann were to break the world record, her like second best times are still going to be incredible. Like she'll still have her 10:06. For 10:63, like it's the world record won't be a flash in the pan. The world record will be just as much of a flash in the pan as Elaine Thompson's gold medal. You could argue that's a flash in the pan because it's one race. The world record's one race. Olympic finals one race. All that, you know, whatever. I'm just saying. Come on, man. If you break FloJo's world record, you're the best.
Yeah.
I know we had an Olympics and all, but like, no.
Listen.
And this isn't like. Some like the Olympics and there's like time trial world record attempts with lighting on the track and super spikes and all this stuff. No, this is just raw. You're beating a record from the 1980s.
Leave the lights out of this. Now it's personal for me. I was going to let that go, but now I'm fired up. I don't think your argument's crazy. I don't think it's crazy at all. Like I will listen to that side of it. I would just on balance, I would still give it to Thompson Raw. And this is the position they put us in because they've been so spectacular this year that I don't think that that's a crazy argument. But I'm just going to give way more weight because to me, there's the Olympics and there's everything else, right? I'm waiting a Diamond League final the same as I would wait pre, the same as I would wait them going head-to-head against each other in the Jamaican Championships. The one meet that gets elevated above everything else by a huge, huge, huge factor is the Olympic Games. Because it has to be. So, all right. I think we're going to leave it there. We're debating something that might not happen at all and what would happen next. It's great. It's good. We'll go more into the Diamond League final preview on Wednesday, 9 a.m. Central Time. You can watch it live on the Flowchart Podcast YouTube channel or catch it later on the site or wherever you listen to audio podcasts. Thank you to my co-host, Gordon. Thank you to Colt for producing. Thank you to Travis for producing. We'll talk to you guys in a couple days.